It was just last week where I thought I would be able to relax just a little bit since I had my sermon ready to go. Until I found out that my brother-in-law was speaking on the very same subject that I was going to talk about today. I couldn't believe it. Of course, what are the odds that we would pick the very same thing? Well, I only had a week to go. I had to move fast to come up with another topic, basically starting from scratch. And that had inspired me to share with you all today what I am talking about. Therefore, the title, Are You Prepared? Now, I thought to myself what I would do to prepare for this sermon. And the idea that talking about preparation would be appropriate in light of all that's going on, especially since, number one, I must be prepared at all times, even when unexpected things pop up. And number two, as we've already heard, there are less than 2 weeks to prepare for the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, meaning that we must physically deleaven our houses by cleaning up everything that we have and whatnot, finding time for that. And we also have to examine ourselves spiritually before we take the Passover, alluding to what we have just heard in the announcements and in the message this morning, to see where we are in relation to God and His way of life. However, there is much more to that, because keeping the Days of Unleavened Bread, symbolizing living a sinless life, and we have to be prepared at all times for the unexpected, especially now, since the time is getting closer to Christ's return. With all the things that are going on in this economy, and all the things that Obama is talking about and the things that have been passed in Congress and Senate, we have to be prepared at all times. Because we know that Christ's return is getting closer and closer. But we do have a general idea of what to expect. And that is why we must be free from sin. The book of Revelation is a book of prophecy. It hasn't come to pass yet, and it is quite scary to actually, when you think about what is stated in this book and what's prophesied and what is going to happen on this earth. So if we go to the book of Revelation, starting in chapter 6, Revelation chapter 6, verse 12 through 17, we're talking about some of the things that we are going to expect to see, and it's talking about the heavenly signs. In verse 12, I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. Then the stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man hid themselves in the cave and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Verse 17, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Obviously, nobody will be able to stand. No human, that is. And going to chapter 8 and in verse 7, we see the trumpets being blown here. And starting with the first trumpet in verse 7, the first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Verse 8, then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And the third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. And then verse 10, the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was bitter. It was made bitter. And then in verse 12, the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpets of the three angels who are about to sound. Now, when we read these scriptures, and let's say if things like this were to happen now, I mean, not all in a row like that, but people would come to the conclusion of a natural disaster, and it wouldn't come from God. But the way these things are explained and prophesied here, once this starts to happen, people are going to know that. People are going to relate this to the Bible, and they're going to see, especially after the first and second trumpet are blown, and those things happen, well, then they can pretty much figure out what the third one's going to be when they tied in with the Bible. But see, even there, they can think about all these things that we've just read here before we get to the second part of verse 13 and think to themselves, this is just a natural occurrence. Of course, a lot worse than what has already been experienced or what we have seen. But the moment they hear that voice shouting out of heaven, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels are about to sound, how do you think people are going to react? See, the only way we can be saved is through God and God alone. However, we in the church here and what we already know, we have a critical part to do also. We have to make sure that we are strong in the church. And there is a dangerous warning for those who take this lightly. And that, what I'm referring to, is also in the book of Revelation. And that's referred to the lukewarm church. So in Revelation chapter 3, verse 14, and we'll read to 22. Verse 14, the angel of the church of the Laodiceans writes, these things says the Amen, the faithful and the true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. Verse 17 talks about physical wealth. Verse 18 talks about spiritual wealth. And that is what's important, because physical isn't going to get you, you know, into the kingdom if you're just going to rely strictly on that. So in verse 19, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore, be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me. To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. Verse 22, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. This is why this is important, to be part of God's church and to do what God commands us to do. If you want to be saved and prepared, we have to watch and be aware of what is happening in this world, and also be aware of what is happening in the church. And there is certainly some crazy stuff happening around the world right now. We hear it all the time. We read in the updates. But what we need to be is ready for Christ's return. And I'm going to be repeating this statement throughout the sermon because it's very, very important. And it ties in great with what which we heard already this morning. So let's go to the book of Matthew. And talk about the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 1. Very familiar, obviously, but nonetheless, very important. Chapter 25 and verse 1, then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. And we're talking about pure and purified through Christ's blood. 10 virgins here. So in verse 2, now 5 of them were wise and 5 of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps, it's an indication of God's word, and took no oil with them, which indicates God's Spirit, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out and meet him. Why at midnight? Because everybody's asleep, no one expects it. It's the darkest time of the night, a time when, you know, to be prepared, that is at all times. So they pick that time because no one expects it. Verse 7, then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly I say to you, I do not know you. Therefore, watch, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. So as I've already mentioned when we read about what's going to happen in Revelation, when those signs or when those events happen, people will then start to wake up. And what are they going to do? They're going to cry out to the Lord, but at that point, it's already too late. So when that time comes, will we be ready to go where God tells us to go? When that time comes, will we be strong enough, possibly even leaving everything behind when the moment arises? Even all of our material possessions, friends, and perhaps even family. Now, there are examples of individuals in the Bible who had to prepare to evacuate, and they had to be ready. They had plenty of warning, and they had specific instructions by God to do exactly what was commanded. Now, they had a choice whether to listen or not. But when they did listen, they also had to have faith. And the first example I want to talk about is Noah. And we all know that Noah was a just man. He was perfect in his generations. The only man at that time who obeyed God. We read about that in Genesis 6, 9. But do you sometimes feel like that you are all alone? I mean, Noah really was alone. But sometimes we may feel like that as well. So God gave him a specific command to make an ark in the middle of a desert because he would flood the whole earth. God told him specifically how to build it and what to take. And you know about that in verses 14 through 22 of Genesis 6. Now, we know that Noah had incredible faith and did what God commanded him to do. Now, if Noah had not done this, then we would not be here today. Because it only took one man to follow God and to preserve mankind. Now, we have to be like Noah and do exactly what God commands us to do, or else there will be no hope for mankind and what the overall potential of man is. God saved Noah and gave us another chance. We could also read about that in chapter 9, verse 1. But there was yet someone else after that, who was Abraham. And he was also given a command and promise. And you want to read that one, so let's go to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1 through 3. The Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country. Get away from your family and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now this is a huge promise that God is giving to Abraham. Now Abraham's grandson Lot was also given a command to prepare for evacuation, since the city of Sodom and Gomorrah where he lived would be destroyed because of the wickedness of the people. And in chapter 19 of Genesis, chapter 19, starting in verse 12, the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whoever you have in the city, take them out of this place." Now the men I'm referring to are the angels that were sent down from God to tell Lot to evacuate. And verse 13, "For we will destroy this place because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-laws who had married his daughters, and said, "Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But to his sons-in-laws, he seemed to be joking. Verse 15, When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. And so it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, "Escape for your life, do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed." Then Lot said to them, "Please know, my Lord," in verse 19, "indeed now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die." Now, Lot was pretty much, on the wire there. I mean, he believed them, but at the same time, he still had doubt here because he feared that something would happen to him going to the mountains. So he didn't quite have the faith there at that moment. He should have. See, well, we react like that too when we are in a situation like that. When the time comes and we have to evacuate and go where God tells us to go. I mean, do you expect, now I don't know where he's going to have us go, but do you expect that he's going to bring in some oasis where there's, abundance of greens and water and everything like that? Or are you just going to, are we going to go where he tells us to? I mean, it may be a desolate place, cave, who knows? So anyway, Lot was willing, you know, after a little pushing here, Lot was willing to go. But the problem, I mean, then he brought his wife and his two daughters with him as well. However, Lot's wife was not as strong as Lot was. So in verses 20 to 26, we see the outcome, what happened to her. In verse 20, see, now the city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there, and my soul shall live. And he said to him, angel saying to Lot, see, I have favored you concerning this thing also, in that I will not overthrow the city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for it cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun has risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. So then verse 24, the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. He overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. But, verse 26, his wife looked back because of behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And that's because she did not want to let go of what she grew up in. She was so used to that lifestyle, she was so used to that world, that she could not let go of it. Now, there will be a few of us that won't evacuate when that time comes. Not everyone will be chosen for the place of safety. That is why we have to make sure that we remain obedient, that we remain faithful, and are prepared for Christ's return. Moses was also given a specific command by God to flee Israel from Egypt. So in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7 through 10, we read about God's command for Moses. Verse 7, the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Now, at first, just like Lot, Moses didn't have all the faith and confidence that he could do what God commanded. But with a little bit of pushing, see, God is a very patient God, and he's not going to, you tell him no once, he's not going to give up on you. So he didn't give up on Moses either. So what did he do? So God made up his mind that it would be Moses. Well, God already made up his mind. It was going to be Moses that would do the job. And there was nothing that Moses could do to get himself out of it. Even though it didn't seem strong enough at first, but God saw something in Moses. And he would come around. And he did. As the story goes, we know that. Yet there's another individual who tried to flee from God, but that didn't work out either. And we're talking about Jonah. And he knew, after the great fish had swallowed him up and spit him back out, that it was God that woke him up, trying to tell him something. Because you can't escape from God. You know, if God commands us to do something, we'd better do it. Or else there will be consequences. God will do whatever it takes for us to wake up. But we do still have a choice to make. The ultimate choice is actually up to us. So going back to the story with Moses, God assured Moses continually that he would be with him the whole time. And as the story goes, Moses went to Egypt, showed miraculous signs through God to Pharaoh, and after the 10 plagues that God bestowed on Egypt, Pharaoh then finally let the people go free. Now we know that the 10th plague was during the time of the Passover, which was instituted and then followed by the unleavened bread. And since that is quickly approaching, it doesn't hurt to go into that. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 14, I'm sure we'll be going over this many, many times. It'll be embedded in our minds, so might as well let me be the first to start with it then. So in Exodus chapter 12, verse 14, "So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance." This is a command also given by God, a continuation. "7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses," or actually should have been removed from your houses, "for whoever eats unleavened bread from the first day until the seventh, that person shall be cut off from Israel." So I'm actually not going to read all of this because we're going to hear about it anyway. So what I'll do, I'll skip over to verse 24 and what we shall do here. And for those people out there who think it's been done away with, it's right here in writing, in verse 24, "You shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever." And then in verse 42, "It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations, and it will continue forever and ever as it is commanded." This is a preparation every year for us to keep. We have to prepare for this physically and spiritually, and we also must be prepared to participate in the Passover ceremony. In verse 48, "When a stranger dwells with you and wants to keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it." We're talking about spiritually here, of course. "And he shall be as a native of the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat it." Obviously, having to be baptized to keep the Passover, or partake of the Passover. Now, since we use a lot of Old Testament examples, so let's go to a New Testament example. And we're talking about Christ. He also had to prepare for evacuation, pretty much, by fleeing from his parents, from King Herod, after Christ was born. Of course, he was too young to do anything about it, but nevertheless, he also had to flee. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 13, 15. "Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, 'Arise, take the young child and his mother, flee to Egypt, and stay there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him.' When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed from Egypt, and was there until death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.'" Now they had to wait in Egypt for a little while until Herod was dead, since he was out to kill Christ in Bethlehem. And in verse 19 to 23, talks about that. "So when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, 'Arise, take the young child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the young child's life are dead.' Then he arose, took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea instead of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned by God in a dream, he turned aside into the region of Galilee. Once again, still had doubt. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophets. He shall be called a Nazarene. So, of course, it was a fulfillment as well, and that's how it happened. And with all these examples of how everybody fled, you know, how it came to them as in a dream, as God just saying it to them, start to wonder how in the future, when that happens to us, how we will know when it is time to leave, when it's time to flee, to go to the place of safety. We don't quite know how that's going to happen, but it's quite interesting how, with all the examples in the Bible, you can pretty much figure out how that could be. Now, there will be a time again when we, just like Israel, will have to be saved out of this world. But we have to respond to God's calling starting now. We individually have to be prepared for the coming of Christ. We read about the fall of Babylon the Great, which is political, religious, and economical power at the end time. And at that time, where the unimaginable and terrible events will take place. And I'm going to continue in Revelation chapter 18. Just to reiterate what I just said. Revelation 18, verses 4 and 5. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, "Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." Again, when that time comes, we have to make sure that we are spiritually ready, because we are not going to have the time to prepare all of our physical belongings for evacuation. And there are some things that we must consider at that time. So I'd like to go to Mark chapter 13. I'm going to talk about the things that we, again, must consider at this end time in chapter 13, starting in verse 14. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who was on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter to take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter. For in those days there will be a tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Then if anyone says to you, "Look, here is the Christ," or "Look, he is there," do not believe it. And verse 22, for false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. But take heed, see, I have told you all these things beforehand. We do not know when that time is going to be. And that's in verse 32-37. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels and the Father, nor the Son, but only the Father. But take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each of his work and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. So watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly, he find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to you all, watch. Now I'm sure a lot of you already had a small taste of what it is like to prepare for an evacuation, especially those of us who living in San Diego had to go through the fires not once, but twice, and we had to prepare for an evacuation, and some of us even had to evacuate. But during that time, it's amazing how, when in that type of situation, how your thinking changes, how personal possessions don't seem as important as they normally would be, but all you think about is surviving. Now, what about situations where you might not have much time to react? Let's say, like, preparing for an emergency landing. There was an airliner that was having engine trouble, and the pilot instructed the cabin crew to have the passengers take their seats and get prepared for an emergency landing. And during that time, obviously, what are you going to do? I mean, you don't really have anything with you anyway, but all you think about is surviving. So a few minutes later, the pilot had asked the flight attendants if everyone was buckled in and ready for, you know, emergency landing, I guess. So they replied saying that everybody's ready, we're all set. But there was one out there, a lawyer, who was going around still passing out business cards. So during times of distress, you know, I mean, he was thinking about himself, you know, and he wasn't even thinking about, you know, dying in the crash. He was actually thinking about the aftermath and making some kind of profit from it, you know, and I guess you could say he cared for others as well, but he also cared for himself. But the small taste I was talking about earlier, having to do with the fire evacuation, I don't think anybody's been in an emergency landing situation. Or if you have, hopefully it didn't happen like that. But anyway, I'll ask the question again. Will you be ready for Christ's return? I'm going to read another parable in Matthew 22. And this one is the parable of the wedding feast. And starting in verse 1, or verse 2, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son, and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, but they were not willing to come. Again, he sent out other servants, saying, tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready, come to the wedding. But they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up the city. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite them to the wedding. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all who they could find, both bad and good. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment? And he was speechless. The king then said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away and cast him into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And to summarize this whole parable, verse 14 states, for many are called, but few are chosen. It is very important to continually keep God's commandments and we have to remain strong. I'm going to quickly read Revelation 19. On the end time when this same situation will arise. So Revelation chapter 19, verse 5 through 9. A voice came from the throne saying, "Praise our God, all you his servants and those who fear him, both small and great." And I heard, as it were, the voice of a great multitude, as a sound of many waters, and as a sound of the mighty thundering, saying, "Alleluia, for the Lord God omnipotent reigns. Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in a linen clean and bright, for the linen is the righteous acts of the saints." And then he said to me, "Write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb." And he said to me, "These are the true sayings of God." At the end time, it will become increasingly difficult to remain faithful and obedient because people that we are in close contact with will betray us and they will hate us for what we believe in. Perhaps that has happened already. Have we lost friends over our beliefs, over ridiculous things like Christmas? Tell somebody, "I don't keep Christmas, well, I'm not your friend anymore." Or things like that. I have. You probably have too. And sometimes it does feel as if we are alone. You know, because there's only a few of us out there that believe the things we do. But don't forget, we are not alone. This has already happened to a lot of us to a certain extent. So again, let's go to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verse 35 to 40. Will we be ready at all times? Verse 35, "Let your waist be girded and your lamps burning, and you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, that may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you, that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. And if he should come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." Now, we know that the time is near, and we have to be prepared. And we have to make ourselves spiritually strong, and we have to observe what is going on in this world, making sure that we don't fall right into as many in the church have already done. Now, we have less than 2 weeks left before we take the Passover, before we ask our merciful Father to forgive us our sins. This is our fresh start to try to live a sinless life, a taste of what God's kingdom is all about. Are we preparing ourselves for this right now, for what the future holds? Many people will not be ready for Christ's return, but we have the advantage right now because of what we already know. So again, I say, will we be ready when that time comes?